All right, hold on.
Love Talk
music.
Radio.
Oh, right. Gotta play the music. Oh, that's too loud. Okay, that's a little better. Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Hey, everyone in Blog Talk Radio Land, once again, it's Big Red and Brother B back with the menu. And, oh, tonight, and maybe for many more other nights, we have a new host with us. Or I wouldn't call it so much a host, because I'm not a host. Big Red is not a host. This is more like, you know, this is a conversation. So we'll just say we're adding another person into our weekly conversation. Sounds a little
Great.
Better? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, Lady C.
Hello, hello.
Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Lady C.
Okay.
Hi, Lady C.
Okay.
Joining Big Red and Brother B today, and looking forward to the conversation.
Okay, what's your sign?
What's your sign?
Scorpio, and I like long walks on the beach.
Okay, see, yeah, don't you weirdos get any ideas? So okay, so yes, we have Lady C joining us tonight, and you know, of course, hopefully. For many more nights. I mean, you know, she has a busy schedule, but, you know, we like to liven up the party. So, once again, it's Brother B, Big Red, and Lady C with the menu. And hello, everybody on Blog Talk Radio. How y'all doing? So, how you doing, Big Red? Oh, wait a minute. I forgot. Well, I didn't forget, but I have to mention it was Big Red's birthday the other day, so
yes,
we gotta do it. Happy birthday to you.
Yes, thank you kindly. Thank you kindly.
Is your hangover done?
Yes, it is, because I've been hungover since Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
So,
you really celebrated.
Oh, yeah, my hangover is like, this is the last day. Last day, I can't do it no more.
Wait, was your birthday like Kwanzaa? Like,
Each day, I had to, you know, it was something different. It was like the eye opener, yeah, it was something, yeah.
Okay,
wow.
All right. So as long as no farm animals were harmed in the, you know, whatever you're doing.
During the birthday celebration.
That's a good thing. So, yeah, man. So, how does it feel to be a year ancient?
It feels the same. But I'm, just blessed to be here and, you know, just, you know, looking forward to many more years. And, yeah, I my feet still hurt, but that's all right.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good thing.
Yep, right. If they wasn't hurt, I'd be worried.
Yeah, true.
If they wasn't hurt, I'd be worried. I'd be like, uh-oh.
Yeah,
they ain't hurt no more. What's
around.
Going on? Right?
You ain't got no damn feet.
I know.
So,
oh,
yeah, man,
God.
Once again, the menu on Blog Talk Radio, Big Red, Lady C, and Brother B. We are on Facebook. The menu, Mind Your Mental. That's MINDURMENTAL. And our email is the menu. mindyourmental@gmail.com. So that's the menu, mind, MENTAL, your mental, @gmail.com. So you want to hit us up with any questions, any comments, any show ideas. Hey, you know, we're open to all suggestions, except if they're, like, really
perverted or, you know, something real mean. We don't do we don't do weird stuff like that. But teachers on. Of course teachers on. So I was on my way from work this morning and I was listening to some talk radio. And apparently, I didn't know that, because I really didn't care, but I didn't know that this guy's State of the Union address was coming up. And I really, you know what, you know, the other day I took a moment to actually watch this Cheeto speak. And I don't know if anyone is familiar with Andrew Dice Clay, but, yo, he's like a Andrew Dice Clay in a suit.
Yo, I said, you know what's so funny? Yes. That's exactly who he reminds me of. I'm glad you said that because for the longest I've been trying to think of who it is that he reminds me of when he speaks, and I don't like listening to him, but that's exactly who he sounds like, Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah,
I'm not too familiar with Andrew Dice Clay.
He's a stand-up comedian. Dice Clay is old school. He I don't know if he still does stand up, but you know, back in the day, he's a stand up comedian, and he had like this Fonzarelli, like from Happy Days type character, and you know, he would smoke a cigarette on stage, and he always did a lot of the hand gestures, and was like hey and ho and this, you know, but you have to like probably Google him and watch and see like
I'm gonna ask him. Maybe like okay, do you know who Johnny Bravo is? It was a cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, that's who he kind of sounds like too.
Oh
when
wow.
He talks, Johnny Bravo.
That's great.
It's kind of like that typical sort of New York accent with the hand gestures and the
I really was kind of waiting for this moment because I don't think like how the State of the Union is like about an hour.
Oh,
I believe. I'm willing to make a wagers. Like I don't think he can talk for that long. Like and like really actually be. I just really think he just can't stand there that long at a podium and just talk. I don't think he can.
He's also into tandems a lot, so I think he can fill the space with a bunch of nonsense for sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I can't. I don't know, man. I can't picture. But when I was listening to the radio station, I think it was 103.9 or whatever, they were talking about how the Black Caucus, like some people were disappointed in the Black Caucus and how they were, you know, planning to show up to the State of the Union address and things of that nature because of, you know, some past statements that he has made and, you know, just the propaganda and rhetoric that goes along with him and racist statements or what some would deem, you know, racist and all that stuff. And my take on it is this. Hard to give respect to someone who's disrespectful, but to actually be the better, you know, we always look adversity straight in the face and call it for what it is and just deal with it. You know, we brush the dirt off our shoulder and just keep it moving. Showing up is not about support. I think showing up is just about being respectful to, you know, the address that's been going on for so long, which is the State of the Union. It's not about him. It's about things bigger than him. And I think since he's taken office, he's just really made this country and a lot of people here in this country just look bad. And I think a lot of people abroad probably look at this country, and then of course we've, you know, seen it on news reports and stuff like that, but then again, we can't always believe what we, you know, and what we hear or see in the media. But I think there's a sentiment running that, you know, America is full of, you know, buffoonery, and they have the ringmaster leading the charge. And it's just sad that we've come to this sunken place because of one individual. But then at the same time, this individual actually represents a good majority of people that believe
in what he believes
and what he says. Yeah, and what exactly.
Mm. And he's revealed our sunkenness.
Yep.
Yeah. And as much as some people don't want to adhere to it, listen, he opens the door for all types of bigotry, racism, you know, misogynistic type thoughts. Like he's like the Pandora's box that has been opened, and he really reflects, you know, the attitude that a lot of people support, because this, you know, because this is who they are, and we can't really get mad. We can't get too mad about it, because it is what it is. It is what has always been. And whether you're black or you're a minority in this country, you know, Mexican, you know, Puerto Rican, you know, Indian, Asian, whatever, no matter what your background is, America has been built by liars. And this is just what it is. This is how it started out, and that's how it's always going to be. It's been built off the backs of, you know, slaves, not just African-American, but there's been others, you know, like the Chinese who, you know, with the railroads and stuff like that. So, you know, as much as a certain portion of America wants to say, oh, make America great again, the whole thing is, when was it great? Was it great when we were enslaved? It was great when you were on top of the food chain. But now that you're not on top of the food chain, I think that's the problem. I think that there's a fear that, oh, we're going to be replaced. Listen, let's understand something, pilgrims, white people, Anglo-Saxons, whatever you want to call yourself. No one's trying to replace you.
Right, so we're just trying to live, just like y'all.
Exactly.
That's all we're trying to do. We're just trying to live.
A little bit of equality.
Yeah.
But some people seem to have a problem, you know, with that trying to live, because they feel that, well, we can't live unless we live off of you. And I don't get that. I don't really get that type of thought. I don't have that thought pattern. I don't know what that's all about. But I guess it is what it is. But also, you know, I say that to say this. You know, when we do shows pertaining to certain things about black or whoever, like, once again, it's always objective. Like, no one is trying to fight for someone's cause or saying, hey, you know, black people are getting a bad rap or white people are getting bad rap. Listen, it's conversation. It's communications. Once again, it's something that it's conversations that we just don't have, that need to be had, and we're going to have. You know, we're going to have it on this show. If you choose to be a part of it, that's on you. You're always welcome to call in. Guest calling number is 347-324-3395. And if not, listen, keep your hate over there, because we're not about that, you know, at all. So, with that being said, the topic for tonight is being black in the workplace.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to throw somebody under the bus right now, because she came up with the topic.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm throwing you under the bus. Yeah. So, Lady C, being black in the workplace.
Why did I come up with the topic?
Sure.
It's a topic that's very relevant to me. I work in a super corporate office, and honestly, daily it's always a balancing act between professionalism and being silenced as a black woman in particular. So it's a topic that I always like to get input from other black people. I work with a lot of white people, pilgrims, as Brother B likes to call them. So you know, hearing different perspectives on the matter definitely is something that I wanted to do. So I was like, this is a topic that's very relevant to me, and I want to hear what you guys have to say about it. That's really all it is. And being black in the workplace, yes, blackness itself is a color. We're defining people of color. But when I'm saying being black, like that phrase, relates to the stereotypes associated with being a person of color in the workplace. Mm. So it's not just, yeah, that's really what that means.
Right.
When you hear the question, what do you get from it, Big Red?
Okay. Well, basically like what you said, like being, when you're working somewhere and being black working, I'm not going to say, you know what? And that can go both to me, and I'm thinking now it can go both ways, because it don't have to always be you're a black person working mostly around, you know, white people and
right.
You're getting stereotyped. How about when you're working around your own people and you're getting stereotyped or criticized or ridiculed or being treated a certain way?
Yeah. I mean,
you understand,
it
can go, but that can go both ways. That's how I'm looking at it. When I hear it, that's how I look at it. Like that can go both ways, because even, you know, like I say, even your own people will treat you. And you, like, I'm black like you. You don't have to treat me a certain way just because you may have a higher position than I do.
Right.
And we have in the workplace, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, I'm sorry. But
we have that
in the workplace where, you know, I'm sure all of us have seen that and heard it and seen it or heard it from other people where, like I said, your own will treat you a certain way because they have a certain status or they have a certain position. They're a manager, they're a director, but then they'll treat you a certain way. And it's like, hold up, last time I checked, I know where you come from. Like, it may not be exactly where I come from, but you come from the same place I come from. Like, don't do that.
Well,
yeah, I think that's all about the insecurity that a lot of, you know, black people in leadership positions feel, just trying to distinguish themselves sometimes and going too far with it, maybe, obviously, especially things that you've experienced. But it all has to do with, like, the perception, right? Like, how are we viewed and how much can we create alliance with other black people, and then we become bucketed as all the same. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's a hard balancing act, and I think that's what the greater conversation is about, is just that balancing act of like how to be a leader, but be black, but also, you know, be accepted, and I use hand quotes with that, by, you know, your white colleagues. So it's definitely a struggle.
Right.
Well, I like what you said when you said damn, I just had it. When you said, basically, a black person trying to, I guess they're basically trying to separate themselves or make a name for themselves off of someone else. So
that crab
my
in
whole
a
thing
sort
is,
of mentality.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, we don't have to do it, but some do it because they feed very much into the title. See, When let's go back. My thing is, first of all, when we say being black in the workplace, which I don't really understand why there's a color issue, what is being black or what is being too black? That's what I want to know, because I didn't know that, other than a color, I didn't know there was, like, being black was actually some type of act. You know, you're acting black. Like, I didn't know it was an act.
But you know what that is?
We had roles to play.
Right, but you know what that is? That's like a, like I said, that's going back to, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut nobody off, but that's going back to the stereotype of what they have been brought up to see. This is what they're seeing on TV, what they're seeing on, and now in this day and age, social media, and it's like, they're seeing certain things that, oh, we always knew they acted like that, but now we're really seeing. We heard from Susie next door that, you know, she has that one friend and she acts like this, but we never seen it, but now we're seeing it. Oh, we have so-and-so on the job, and, oh, yeah, he acts just like what they say or what we see on TV. So it's just like it's that stereotype that they always hear about, but now they're seeing it.
Well, yeah. Let's take it back, because the other day, real quick, the other day I was watching some cartoons, some real old black and white cartoons, and if you get this, if you really look at them as I was looking at them and saw the subliminal messages of how the black characters were portrayed, you know, in these cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, they're always all right. It's like this: if Big Red, if I want you to believe that Lady C has an attitude with me, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to start slowly feeding you, you know, like, yeah, well, you know, we were talking, me and Lady C were talking the other day, and she kind of, you know, said something to me that struck a bad chord and da-da-da-da. And then a couple of days later, I come back to you, it's like, yeah, Lady C said something that just didn't really make me feel comfortable and this, this, that, and the third. And then I do it on another occasion. After a while, it's going to start to build up. It's like, well, wait a minute, you're always telling me that she's saying something wrong to you, or you're taking offense to it, so she must have a problem with you.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? It's all mm-hmm. about the role that has been set. And when years ago they had to portray us as savages, they had to portray us as, you know, murderers, thieves, and, you know, because they didn't want us in their society. They didn't want people to accept us. They wanted to keep us, you know, underfoot. So they had to put out these bad images. They had to go out and say, oh, black people are this or black people that. Now, fast forward to now, we have some cats who make it bad for everybody else, and they want to shout gangster, gangster, or thug, thug, or whatever, and then record labels or, you know, certain places are like, yeah, yeah, I like that idea. Go out there and pitch that. Meanwhile, these people that are not of color are going home telling their kids, hey, listen, you're not going to be like those in the street. You're not going to be like them. There's certain things that you're just not going to do or you're not going to be about, because that's who they are. Like, that's not real in your world. So somebody has to sell the visual in order to build this stereotype. And this is what has been built. And it's sad that we kind of feed into it, because as much as cats want to talk about they balling and they had this money and that money, if you really had money like that, you wouldn't be compromising who you are for a dollar.
Right.
But sadly, we do it to ourselves all the time.
And just speaking about compromising yourself, and that's, you know, sort of related to the topic in the workplace, like people do, you feel like a sense of shame sometimes if you feel like, oh, I should have spoke up a little bit more about this topic that they were discussing in the workplace. Or even look at like the H&M ad about the little kid who had the coolest monkey in the jungle. I'm sure there were some black people who saw that happening, but they didn't, you know, and that would be plain ignorance. But there is that discomfort sometimes saying, well, like, am I being too sensitive about this? Or is this really, you know, is this really something that's racist or, you know, biased? What is this feeling that I feel, this discomfort, and is it related to being black? And then you
well,
compromise yourself in a way because you don't really know for sure.
Well, do you think that we're doing a disservice to our community, or do you think you're doing more of a disservice to yourself when you're not speaking up?
Both, really. Yeah, both. I mean, because you're sort of letting those actions, whatever they may be, slip by, and then, you know, it creates sort of a culture in your workplace, for example, your culture, or, you know, an action that maybe your supervisor or someone else, your colleague, that they didn't get checked on, and it basically makes it normal, makes it okay. And you have to sort of deal with that internal baggage of not being the person who spoke out, but also being the person who may be worried about being alienated, because if they did speak out, then it's like, oh, this is a sensitive black girl, she's overreacting, you know, and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, caller 4644, you're on the air with the menu. What's up?
You know, maybe if you had titled the topic being black in some workplaces, because all workplaces don't demonstrate same experiences.
And your name is, sir, how you doing? Welcome to the menu.
My name is Mr. Pianki.
Okay, how you doing, sir? Welcome back.
Yeah, I worked in commercial construction and went on to own my own steel erection business. And some of the things that you were making mention of, we didn't never have experience there. So it's not something that all black people experience. We live in the best country, I think, on the planet. I've been to a lot of things you're able to do and able to achieve. You also have to think about people like Nigerians who are as black as Wesley Snipes and Isaac Hayes. They come here and do so well. And also, not only the ones that come, but some that are born second or third generation outperform others, Asians and even whites, academically. And, you know, some areas like in Maryland and Houston, they have abundance of businesses and also in, you know, your highly paid professions. So everybody don't experience the same thing. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, because it does, but if it does, it needs to be looked at very carefully, and things need to be put in place in order to alleviate it.
You don't seem to think that there. I mean, now you're absolutely right. You know, it doesn't always happen, but sometimes some of us have that insecurity, you know, when stepping into certain situations, especially when it comes into corporate America, because a lot of times we're not represented, presented, or that much accepted in the corporate workplace, depending on what type of work it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we're not always taken serious when we step into the world of finance, when we step into the, you know, the world of, you know, technology. You know, we're not always, you know, taken seriously. And we can do just about any job that anyone else could do. But once again, it's like, hey, you're black, you stick to maybe some fashion, a football or a basketball or rapping or singing. Like that's basically, those are the categories that we have to, you know, pick from, because there are a lot of people that feel that this is what you guys do.
Well, you know, I disagree with that. For instance, like for me, you know, you remember 9/11, you know, those buildings that fell down in New York?
Yeah.
I put buildings like that up for almost 4 decades. I had my company, own company that had done so, and bridges. So I never experienced these things that you're saying, and no one ever questioned about whether I should be doing that or should I be rapping or something of that nature. And you have African-Americans, you know, one of the top technology firms, the Worldwide Technology, David Stewart, he's black. He is here in St. Louis. His business is about a $10 billion business a year. So you have African-Americans that's in every facet. Ocean-going cargo ships and, you know, things that you wouldn't even imagine, but they are there. It's just that we just have to strive for those things. Our children have to be exposed to certain things early on and led in those directions, I think. Yes, you do have workplace harassment and so on and so on. But yet and still, I think that's the minor. I don't think that's the major. I think the vast majority of African-Americans don't experience that. If you look at the Black Enterprise Top 100 of black businesses, those businesses spread the gamut from petroleum companies to automobile parts manufacturing suppliers. I mean, they spread the gamut. And I think there's an opportunity for other young people to look at the industry that they're in and try to help them expand into other markets and other areas. But the topic, being black in the workplace, being black in some workplaces, because all workplaces are not the same.
Okay, got you. Yeah, we're just speaking to that those particular workplaces that are like that. But you're right, there are, you know, black businesses that you don't experience those things. But the number of businesses that are not black owned, they far number the ones that are black owned, or industries that are, you know, there's so many different industries. In New York City in particular, there's a lot of ad agencies, a lot of marketing agencies, a lot of finance, you know. So mm-hmm. you do experience those sort of things in those corporate environments.
And I've heard of that.
Yeah, real
too,
quick. Wait, real quick. Caller, hold on, real quick. Caller 2812. Sorry, I was just waiting for a break in the talk to let you come in, but I see that you all got lost. So if you can't call back, if not, but thank you.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I've heard of incidents in marketing, like you made mention, the lady made mentoring, and those things need to be looked at and see what can be done in order to compete against these people that you're trying to. Or work for, and rather
well,
than
sometimes
being,
you can't. Sometimes you can't, because you know what? Just like we have an issue that's going on now with, you know, women and sexual assault. I mean, some people are really just taking a step back, because we have to look at the individual plight. If I see something going on in the workplace that it's not savory, I can say something, but who am I championing? I'm only being a champion to the person that I'm helping, or a champion to myself, but I may not be a champion to other people in the office, because at the start, end of the day, no one really cares about your cause like you, but you, because not everybody, we're not all on the same page. We can be in the same library, but it doesn't mean we're in the same book or we're on the same shelf. And see, that's the problem. If you have 20 people, 20, you know, African-Americans, let's say you have 5 African-Americans, 3 Latinos, 4 Asians, and 6 Mexicans, and somebody wants to scream out, oh, foul, discrimination. Listen, you may be the only one, because then your employer can sit back and say, well, you're the only one saying this, because we have a host of other people here, even though the company may be 50% white or 80% white. Those other few that are not saying anything, because I don't want to lose my job. I don't want, you know, to ruffle any feathers. I don't want somebody to look at me like I'm a rebel rouser.
They're troublemaker.
So they don't say anything.
Yeah.
I don't want to say anything. So I think, you know, it depends on how tolerant the person is to some of the insensitive situations that are going on. Like with the H and to go back to the H&M thing. Yeah, I strongly believe and do feel that there were people who actually knew that, yo, that was wrong. Because you put the white kid, you put the shirt, the strongest survivor or whatever, on the white boy, the little white kid, but yet on the black kid, you put the whatever monkey in the best monkey in the jungle.
Well, let me ask you a question on that. What do you say when you have other T-shirts that come out and call black women bees and so on, so on, so on? That's not made by a white
company. I listen. I say I have an issue with that too. I don't support that. I don't wear it, and I don't support it. But the whole thing is this: it only if it's not exposed. See, they brought it to the light because it's a major company, so somebody it caught fire that way. But any other shirt out there, if it would have. Yeah, because if Russell Simmons did something like that, do you really? I wouldn't support it. You know, hypothetically, if he did something like that, if Carl and I did something like that, I wouldn't support it, because that's not what I'm about, and that's not what I represent. So H&M did it, but see, there's a backstory with H&M. You know, H&M has their factory somewhere in a country in Africa where they don't have to pay taxes. But that's another story. Call is 6947. You're on the air with the menu. What's up?
Hello. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
I'm about 20 years into corporate America. And some
2812, of the things. I got you. Hold on.
Some of the things you're talking about, I have definitely experienced. And what I've learned over the years, when I first came into my company, I came in, I was intimidated. I pretty much would not challenge things that were wrong, because there's always a fear you're going to lose your job. Like you also mentioned, we as a people don't stand up in a group. We know it's wrong. We'll talk amongst each other, But when one person stands up, you don't have anybody backing you.
Yep.
But when the benefits come through, everybody is up there and they
everybody's
want to
like,
that.
Oh, yeah, I'm down now. Yeah.
So over the years, what I've learned is if the issue does not involve me, I'm not getting involved. But I now realize that I don't work for my supervisor or my manager. I actually work for the company. And with the company, we have a contract. They're to treat me and give me certain things, and I'm to deliver certain things. So when you have a problem with someone like an immediate supervisor or manager, you do have the right to speak up. You don't have to fear that because you don't agree with this particular person that the company is going to back them. And over 20 years, there have been situations where I have spoken to high-level execs about the behavior of people that are higher up on the scale than me because of their treatment. And I go right to them and I say, wait a minute, I'm sorry. I think maybe you're confused. I work for this company and not for you. And you need to establish that type of respect. If you want me to respect you, I deserve the same type of respect. And if I'm not going to get it, we're going to need to speak to your boss about your behavior. So I think as you get more comfortable where you are and you start to learn what your rights are as a worker, as an employee, you demand more and you receive more. I definitely get treated a lot differently than some of my other counterparts or my other coworkers that are black or Hispanic because I do stand up for myself. And that's just what I wanted to add.
I call it 2012. What's up? 2812, you're on the air with the menu.
I know who you are. Oh, my God. When did you start?
2812, you're on the air with the menu. What's up?
Oh. Hi,
going
can you
once.
Hear
yes, we can hear you now. How you doing?
Oh, great. Yeah, thank you. I'm enjoying the show so far tonight. Good work.
Thank you. And who are you? Who are you? Your name is what? You're breaking up. You're breaking up, ma'am. You're breaking up.
My name is Kay.
Oh, how you doing, Kay? Okay.
Good.
Okay. Is there elemental P
okay.
after that? No, I'm sorry.
You have a very unique name, so I'm opting not to fully disclose. Not sure who's listening.
Oh, okay. Okay. Got you.
But in any event, I'm just kind of wanted to talk about some of my experiences and just to piggyback off of some of the previous comments made by I don't remember the gentleman's name that called in previously. But he had made some comments
he's
about,
still on.
Like,
I think it's Mr. Bianchi.
Yes.
Sir.
Yeah, that's him.
Bianchi.
Okay, yeah. He'd made comments regarding, like, you know, certain black people in certain workplaces that may be outside of corporate America. And as I was listening to some of the comments, it made me think about some of my experiences in corporate as well as in other environments such as higher education and nonprofit. And it made me think of a few points. So it's complicated, right? Being black in the workplace is layered. You have issues that stem with working with people that look like you and then issues that stem with folks that don't look like you. So that's right, high level. But oftentimes young people that are in the workplace or looking for roles don't even have access to those jobs because they don't even know that they exist. So he mentioned something about construction. Those roles are typically harder to reach for young black people. Secondly, oftentimes when people are in the workplace, they don't even know that they're being discriminated against because they don't even have the exposure. Because if you're in a super white corporate environment, you're most likely going to align yourself with someone that kind of looks like you. So you kind of stay in an isolated bubble. It's not until you step outside, and that bubble is typically done by default or even by design, but you don't know what's happening unless you step outside of that, which is really difficult because people, before they're even thinking about you, they have these thoughts, right? So these are like the pre-thoughts to who you are just the minute you walk into a space with black skin. So that's kind of, you're already viewed or deemed as being different without having any real heavy thoughts about who you are. Secondly, someone had made a comment about Africans and how they're in higher ranking roles. And that is
that
true, but sadly, Africans are also viewed differently than the African Americans that are in this country. So I've heard some commentary by Africans and non-Africans that they are viewed as being of a certain social or socioeconomic class because they are in certain roles. So I know that's kind of like taking this conversation in a very different direction,
but it's true. They don't have the same experience.
Well, first of all, in my experience, I'm cut across, but the comment on what you said, I mean, I've come across of my fair share of Africans from Africa, and a lot of them don't respect Black Americans. A lot of them do not like Black Americans. So the role that they, because some of them really don't believe that we're Black. Like, they believe they're Black because they come from Africa. Like, we're not Black. Listen, you stayed there. The ship took us and took us someplace else. Simple and plain. Like, there really is no difference. Maybe the sun beats on you a little bit more than me, but there really is no difference. My thing is,
and that's the sad part about it. It's just like we all the same. Like don't try to act like you're so much better than I am. We're all the same.
I was gonna say that's another thing. Just because you go into a workplace and you see two people with brown skin, you assume that they have the same background and they have the same experiences, and you could have nothing in common with the person next to you. So if you have someone coming over, first generation from another country, they're assuming that, oh, she's Black and you're Black, so if she's saying something, she's representing you too. And that's where you get into, in my field, corporate America, when you're trying to stand up and represent something, you have to always realize that maybe the person next to you doesn't feel that way. They're not going to back
you. Have the same experiences.
They don't have the same experience. It's not their problem.
Well, you know, all Blacks in America is not the same. I mean, we got to face that. Blacks in the North did not experience the things that Blacks in the South. Those up in the Northwest and Washington State thinks different from those down in Florida. So there is a difference.
Yes,
right.
And also, if you think back to, like you mentioned, first generation or the slaves that were brought over, the things that we endured are incorporated in how we were raised and how we react to certain things. I remember being involved with someone that was from another country, Black, just like me, and I went to a meeting that they were having, and they started to have conversations about African-American, and it was very insulting to me. So I stood up and I said something. I said, wait a minute. I said, you're sitting here and you have so much to say about African-Americans. Do you realize you're here as a result of the African-Americans that came over before you? Because if you didn't take those witnesses, you wouldn't be here now.
Right. Absolutely.
So as you sit here and you judge your brother, remember, you can flow through because we had to kick in the door and get the whip. And it made me angry. You know, it made me angry. But like you said, they don't see us the same. We look over and we say, okay, this person looks like me. We all have the same cause. That is not the case. They do see themselves differently. The problems that they're facing are different, and they don't have, I don't want to say the hang-up, but they don't have the scars that those people that came over on the ships have. And they're
right.
Have.
Well,
my thing is simple and plain. We as African Americans or Black people can have all discussions and be different from north to south, east to west, all we want. But other people will always see us as one thing.
Absolutely.
And that perception right there is the perception, sadly, in our society and in our world today that counts, because that perception can either push us left or push us right, up or down, because that's what it determines. See, me and you can both go, me and Red, or let's say Lady C, can go on an interview. We can both be both professional, but somewhere along the lines, the employer is going to look at it like, this is what I've read, this is what I've spoken to others about, and it is what it is. Who's more tameable? Is Lady C more tameable, or Brother B more tameable? Who will I get more of a problem out of if something else arises?
You know what I'm saying? Or who's going to be the person that I can actually work with who's not going to give me some type of resistance or question what I'm doing? See, those factors come into play. I don't think those factors come into play when it comes to other white people, so to speak, because they kind of, there's that, hey, you know, you're part of the gang. It is what it is.
Exactly.
But with us, you got to see, they really have to look at who is going to work with me that I'll have less of an issue with compared to this guy who looks like 50 Cent in the suit, but he seems like he's going to give me an attitude.
Right.
Right, all based on stereotypes. Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think also, I just want to point out something. It's really the thing that's holding us back as a people, as a culture. It is the mentality of divide and conquer. If we're all looking at each other, if you speak to someone that's from the Caribbean versus someone that's from Africa versus someone that's African-American, they all have preconceived notions. I lived overseas, and I would watch TV, and the way that they perceive Americans and the things that are, I'm sorry, African-Americans in particular, you would not want to be known with that group. You know, in all honesty, I'm sitting there as an American watching TV, and they're bringing out the worst that they can about the African-American culture or people brought here. So if I was here from another country and didn't know anything, why would I want to be linked with a group that looks violent? All they're doing is shooting and killing each other.
Right, absolutely.
Each other.
That's what I said earlier. Exactly.
With that.
Yep.
So they come here and they separate themselves, and they're quick to let you know, oh, no, I'm not from here. I'm from there. But at the end of the day, in corporate America, they're looking at you and saying, I don't care where you're from. You're just like him, you know, and we're going to show you that. They just don't realize it because, like I said, they don't have the same scars and things like that. We're more sensitive. Excuse me, I'm African-American. I'm more sensitive to the things that we go through as a people because my ancestors have gone through it so long that they passed it on to me.
No, it's true, and it is sad, and you're right. It is one of those things where if we would stop sort of dividing up everyone based upon culture or where you're from globally, we could probably work better together. But as long as we continue to say, no, I'm from here, and that's your experience, that's not my experience,
right,
you know, we're always going to be in a situation that we're in. And I think as African-Americans, I too am African-American, I think it's really, I mean, even though it's tiring and it's exhausting to have to constantly advocate for yourself and your community, you have to advocate for yourself with others that look like you. You have to advocate for folks that don't look like you.
Right.
You're advocating for, you know, as a woman, you're advocating, you know, against men and that whole, you know, misogyny. So it's like layered and it's tiring. But I think we still have to ultimately, there's a lot more work we have to do as the more we claim like what we experience in this country as something that, not a positive thing, but like, listen, this is what we've endured, and we're not using it as a crutch, but this is it's a launch pad to be able to continue to do really good work. And yes, there's a population of us that are in the sunken place. I'll take that from Get Out. In the sunken place, there's a lot of us that are not and are continuing to strive and do well and have been for a really long time. So this whole narrative about, oh, we're violent, we're this, we're that, that is just a segment of the population. If you go into any urban community, low income, whatever you want to call it, there's more people that get up and go to work than are hanging on the corners and selling drugs.
So let's
talk about those stories and let's share those narratives versus, oh, it's easy to focus in on this one part of the population.
Yeah. Right. True. Absolutely.
I mean, once again, I just find it interesting that there is a term, being too black. I can't really get over it, because once again, I didn't know that there was a definition to being black. See, when you have to put a definition to something, other than just like you're, oh, a black person from this region, or this continent of the world, this, that, and the third. If you're putting, here in America, when they say too black or being black, to me it means something else. And it seems like it comes with a negative, you know, it's a negative label. Like, you know, you think, like most people think 50 Cent is a representative of black people.
Of all black people, right.
Yeah.
When I read that, being too black, I took it to mean, and I assume whoever coined the phrase or whatever was more in a corporate setting or a setting where minorities are the minority. And I coined that to be fitting into more of a stereotypical role that society doesn't, you know, they say we're loud, they say we're lazy, they say, you know, we don't really want to work, you know, we're angry all the time. So when you come into a situation, you speak up for yourself, there you go. See, they look at each other.
Right.
She's angry. No, I'm not angry.
Oh, look at them.
I'm
getting angry.
I used to say to my coworkers, I have more emotions than just happy or angry. You know,
exactly.
Either you're happy or you're angry.
Yeah, but then when you're too then when you're too happy, then they label you a different way. It's like, oh, then we can take advantage of. Oh, send them out for coffee. Send them out for donuts. Send them. But then, you want to give me?
Let me give you an example. What?
Or you want to give me the minimum work instead of knowing that I'm smarter than that? You're going to just let me sharpen pencils all day long instead of let me get on the computer and show you what I can do.
Yeah.
Okay. Example of being too black, for instance, I worked with a group that was trying to have a charter school, and they wanted to have African-centered charter school, have a curriculum based on that. And also in other cities, Detroit, Chicago, and so on. Well, the who the group went to sponsor the school, Harris Stowe College there in St. Louis, and the president was Givens, he looked at it and said, it's too black. So that's what they were talking about at that time. Now, we all know that these things go on, but it's doing a misjustice if you talk about the things that's negative without coming up with some solutions.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I'm big on that, solutions. I mean, we can talk all day. I always, when I'm talking to my friends and they bring up problems, I say, well, you know, the police are out there shooting everybody. Yeah, we know, and we're targets because we have young black males, young black females. Do you encourage your children to get into law enforcement? Because now they're the people making the decisions with the guns. Or do we sit there and say that's not right? Do we encourage our kids to become attorneys or judges so that they can create these laws? Or do we sit there and say, oh, you know, the laws are keeping the black man down?
Absolutely.
We need to come up with solutions.
Absolutely, yeah.
Where we're not just saying, oh, we're putting our power into their hands and expecting them to treat us the same.
Well,
we just have
to
take a different approach.
You have to be that same.
I've also seen and heard the thing of where, oh, now there have been other people. Let's hypothetically take Asian. Because I was looking at an article the other day about how I think is China. I think it was China who banned a certain hip hop artist, and I guess it was because of I guess maybe he was too black. And see, I've heard other people make that comment about other people that are not black. So if you dress a certain way or you look a certain way or you say certain things, she's dressing black or he dresses too black or this, that, and the, and that's what that's the thing that I find very interesting. So you're trying to tell me if I wear my jeans a certain way or a shirt a certain way, that means that I'm acting black? Like, I didn't know that I didn't know we were that much of a problem to actually categorize us as this is what black code is. When you see somebody wearing this or you see them have dreadlocks or something like that or you see them wearing braids,
right?
You know,
because
I've read articles in schools. They talk about, oh, the kids can't wear this or they can't wear that or they can't look like this. Because what is too ethnic? They say it's too ethnic, but
right.
We really know what
they're
saying.
Right. If you think about that, that's how they do. Not to cut you off, Brother B, but that's also another thing about being black in the workplace. And if you work in certain industries or corporate America, that also they try to turn you against what you used to. Like if you have dreads, it's like, okay, you got to cut your dreads. But if this is part of this person, if this is who they are, part of this person, why do I have to cut my dress to work? If I'm still can do the work, what does my hair have to do with it? As long as they're neat and clean and they look decent, what's the difference? You understand what I'm saying? Well, it's like they can also try to change who you are just to fit in that you know, in that box of theirs or that, you know, in that workplace.
But I also
can I say
think
something?
That oh, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, the same thing. You have a similar incident that's going on in Zambia, which is northern Rhodesia at one time, right above Zimbabwe, where the president, Edgar Lungu, is restricting Facebook in that country. Mm-hmm. And I've been in countries, Egypt. You don't go walking around Egypt with Daisy Dukes on. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So that's what you're looking at is that these countries are protecting whatever, the innocence of their children, protecting the infiltration from outsiders on their culture, and they have a right to do that.
But you know what? Real quick. You know what you just said? You said Daisy Dukes, right? Daisy Duke was a white character from a white show back in the 70s. So we didn't originate that. But I get what you're saying. Well, I get what you're saying. Yeah. But it's amazing how if we wear it, it turn around and it goes into it's automatically black when someone else
it's
is wearing it.
Yeah, inappropriate.
Exactly. Thank you, Lady C. It's all of a sudden inappropriate when we wear it, but when somebody else wear it, it's allowable.
Well, it's not inappropriate because
in
Egypt, some white women got killed for going in and out of those temples and tombs wearing that type of clothing. So it's not just black. As a matter of fact, you probably ever see any African Americans over in Egypt. But those rules do stand. I'm sorry, ma'am. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, is this really the standard? I think, and I'm not sure, but in Egypt, it may be a religious basis to it or something like that, and the standard might be a little bit different. But I think, you know, in the corporate space, it seems like an inequality in the fact that, you know, Becky good hair can come in with her little, you know, romper on in the summertime, but if a sister comes in with that same outfit on because her body may be a different type or maybe not, it feels like there's some sort of discrimination there and there's an inequality there. So I think in Egypt it's a little different where that standard is across the board, but here in the workplace setting sometimes those standards are not set evenly. And like Brother B was saying, it's inappropriate all of a sudden when a black girl does it, or now seen as you know, misconduct almost.
Right, the same standards in the workplace for, just to piggyback off of the host, those standards in the workplace for women of color are always going to be viewed, like women can come in, Caucasian women can come in with their hair colored a specific way and it seems as cool, edgy. Mm-hmm. But if a woman of color walks in with her hair dyed, then she's automatically perceived as ghetto. So their perception becomes perception, unfortunately, from our realities in that we have to go into the workspaces feeling a bit more toned down. And then even you had mentioned earlier about blacks judging other blacks, but sometimes when we see women in the workplace that have multicolored hair, we kind of also are like, why would she come to work looking like that? Knowing that
it's like this unspoken code. Like,
girl,
you know you're going to be judged for that. Why would you do it?
Exactly. Right. Like, you know they're going to view you as, I had a boss who had a strip of purple hair, and everyone's like, oh my God, I love your hair. But then another coworker, you know, came in and she was an African-American woman. She had braids and had colorful braids, not over her entire head, but maybe one or two. And people were like, oh, my gosh, that, you know, you could tell they were like, oh, that looks so nice.
Right, really, but you could tell it's the way they said
it's
it.
It's like,
they were
the way they say it.
Right, it was the way, like, oh, that looks so nice.
Right,
thing just happened. I experienced recently where one of my coworkers, she's actually Kenyan. She had a short little pixie cut, and then over the Christmas break, she decided to change her hair, and she got these really long, like, you know, locks, like weaved in locks, mm-hmm. and they were really beautiful. But like everybody's like, oh, I overheard some people saying like, oh, she looks, you know, so different. It almost like it was very uncomfortable for other people to experience that, for her to change her hair in such a dramatic way from the same pixie cut to these, you you know, long.
But it's so, but it's always us that are being judged as that. It's like we do something different, then it's like, oh, they must be being rebellious, so they're doing this. And it's like, no, this is who we are. We do different things. Just like you said, they color their hair all different types of colors, purple, blue, whatever, rainbow, whatever. They do it, and it's fine. But if one of us do it, then it's a problem. Then it's, oh, she's trying to be like so-and-so on now, mind you, Love and Hip Hop, and that person probably don't even watch Love and Hip Hop, but they talk about Love and Hip Hop and all them other shows. So it's just like, it's just sad that it's just that you just can't be who you are. It's like, I'm here to do a job, or I'm here to work. I'm not here to be judged.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I'm probably one of those people that you're referring to. I can change my hair color and length and everything from week to week if I feel like it. And what I always tell people, I'm like, in my culture, it's an accessory. Just like you change your jewelry, if I want to come in and change my hair, I'm going to do it, and I'm comfortable with it. And it is corporate America. Some styles work, some don't.
You learn that time. Now, in that case, like, I don't mean for, like, if you work in a certain, if you work in a certain job, I don't mean come in there and you got the whole, you know, you just know how you supposed to have your hair, or if you put a little color to it, that's fine. That's okay. But I ain't saying come in there with the whole rainbow and all this, you know, other stuff and the hair. You know, you just know what, you know, just do it in I'll say tasteful way.
But my
also only applies to us, right? Like, if we come in with something that's deemed not tasteful, it's almost like we're anti-assimilation into whatever culture, you know, white culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I think using the word tasteful is kind of tricky because it's only applied for us.
Right.
Like the gentleman said earlier, Bianchi, right? It doesn't happen everywhere.
Yeah.
But the fact that it happens is an issue. Like you said, like there is a problem, so we need to talk about, we need to start getting into the dialogue of the solution. And but my thing is, it shouldn't even be a problem. Because once again, what does the color of my skin have to do with the content of my character, as Dr. Martin Luther King has said? Like, what does that have to do with me working? Like, if you hired me to move paper, I'm going to move the paper. If I change my hair color, or I'm listening to a rap song or something like that, what is that? Once again, that has no bearing on me moving paper.
Right,
and
absolutely.
See, and what it boils down to, it's a control factor that I really don't like, because somebody wants to set a certain standard and feel that they can keep control by keeping that standard.
Right.
But see, the thing is this, everyone is an individual. It's just like, I can give you the flu shot, but it's not going to react the same way in everyone. The same medicine is not going to work different on everyone. Hey, listen, I can take 500 milligrams of ibuprofen and still have a headache. You can probably take 200 milligrams and you'll be just fine. You know, I may have to take 800. Everybody's different. But the thing is, we're not treated on an individual basis. It's either one or the other. It's either you're white or you're non-white. And once again, the way that things are going in this country, that's what's keeping us divided. And it's bigger than just being black in the workplace. Once again, we need to talk about the division. We need to talk about why we're divided. We need to talk about why do we keep remaining divided over certain issues and over certain things. So the whole thing is just being black in the workplace. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Like, it's so many more icebergs out there.
I think we all have to acknowledge that the division happened way before Trump came into the office.
Mm-hmm.
I know
there's
a lot of stuff, but I'm telling you, I'm in my 40s, and there was division before I was born.
Oh, yeah.
So
of course.
That's a big thing. So when we're looking at solutions, like I said, I think the biggest thing is we need to encourage the following generation, our children, to get involved in the areas that we see abuses happening. If you don't like your boss because they're treating you a certain way, encourage your kids to become entrepreneurs and start their own business. Then they can have different rules. If you don't like the laws, encourage them to go to school and be able to adjust the laws.
Right,
make
absolutely.
Them more fair and more balanced. We don't have to sit there and say, you know, the police, they're sitting here and they're attacking us and we see it. We need to get our children involved so that they can do community policing. They're actually policing their own neighborhood. You know, I just think that, like you said, we I don't want to say complain. We discuss a lot, but not many people are willing to do.
Another thing is, it goes along with what you're saying is we discuss it, we talk about it, but you know what? There's certain things that some of us still allow. Like, okay, prime example. Once again, we go back to the H&M thing. Everybody else found something wrong with it. Everybody else had something to say, especially black folk. But what did his mama say?
Exactly.
You see what
I didn't
I'm
have
saying?
A problem
you see,
with
you see what I'm saying? You see,
maybe,
you see what I'm saying? That's the whole
like
thing.
A monkey. I wouldn't buy it for my kids, but if you don't like it, you think it's not tasteful, don't buy it. They lose money.
But, and see,
you don't need to make
see,
it a
but,
movement. You need to make a decision. She might think her son looks like
why.
A monkey, and she's willing
well,
to put
I,
it on.
Well, yeah, well, I understand why. For, I understand both ends. The one end is a paycheck. The other end is she's trying to, I guess, break her son into the modeling thing. So sometimes you got to take the blows for the cause. And my whole thing is depending on what cause it is. No, but depending on what cause it is,
well, look at,
you shouldn't
look
have
at
to
Sidney
take the
Poitier.
Blows.
Look at Sidney Poitier. He had accepted any old role. We would all be jigaboos and you know, he had a certain standard
different,
that
different,
he demanded.
That's the key word, standard. How many of us nowadays, especially this generation, even know what that word means?
Absolutely.
And whose fault is that? Because I feel that our generation let this one down because we're not teaching them nothing. We have allowed them to just run wild and go crazy.
Yep.
We're not teaching them anything.
Right.
We're not educating them on anything.
Well, I'm gonna,
and
wait,
they're
I'm
refusing
gonna say
to be educated.
I'm going to say this, Brother B. I'm going to say this. You're right about what I'll say you're partly right because you know what? Some of us are teaching them, but you know you know what they rather listen to than us? Social media, those rappers, and so I'll just say social media because it's not even the TV anymore. It's social media. That's who they rather listen to. Once again, like I say all the time, why should I go out there and try to get a job and work when this person on social media could tell me I could take $50 and flip it to $500 and I don't have to do nothing? You understand what I'm saying? Why should I, as a young lady, why should I go out there and learn, why should I learn to cook or do hair or do something constructive when this girl is on Instagram shaking her behind and showing her half naked and stripping and she can retire because she done made all this money. And that's all she's doing. So why should I go strive to go out there and do something? Some of us are teaching them, but social media is stronger than what we're teaching them. Because I said the same thing. Encourage you have to encourage these kids to go out there. If you don't like the way the police are doing what they're doing, then you become one yourself so you can be the difference. You could become the judge instead of you standing on the other side getting ready to go to jail for something stupid. You could be the judge up there, and maybe you can be that change or that different or the lawyer or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they don't want to because you know what? That's too hard for them because you know what? Social media is telling me, I can flip this $50 or this $10 and make it $500, and I could do that in a week rather than go to school, get an education, learn, and just, you know, do the work and be that lawyer where I can make that same money all the time.
That's only a small population of black people, young black people in general. I worked at a university, and there were plenty of black students who were really big on advocacy work, getting into work at the policy level. So to even make, you know, kind of like a blanketed statement is almost like as if you subscribe to mainstream ideal about what we do or what we do with our children. So I know you weren't speaking about everybody, but I do think there's a generation of young people that are coming up who, yeah, they're on social media and they're looking at the sales on Instagram and all that stuff. But then there's other population who are really looking to make impact at the policy level. And there's work to be done there for sure, but none of that stuff is being highlighted. It's the Instagram BS that's being talked about, and that's not an accurate depiction of our culture.
That's why I made the statement. I said it to get you to say what you needed to say. I got to play both sides of the fence.
I think also as a culture, we are just too materialistic. We're teaching our kids that their value is in what they have, not what they can give back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every kid wants to, like you said, take the $50, flip it to $500 in a week, as opposed to roll up your sleeves and learn how to do a trade.
Absolutely.
You know,
we just,
as a people, we are just very materialistic, and we have bought into what mainstream society tells us we need in order to survive. We are all living in the same neighborhood, judging each other, and trying to outdo our next-door neighbor, and at the end of the day, none of us have nothing.
Right.
Still living in the project. Not like it's bad. But my whole thing is don't talk about what's going on in apartment A when you're in apartment B and you doing the same damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're gonna do it, just do it. Yeah, don't a lot of times people wanna separate themselves from the so called reality that they perceive. And my thing is, listen, your life ain't that bad. Because if it was that bad, then maybe you would be in a cardboard box. But then again, there are people out there living on the streets that don't have a care in the world, and they doing okay. So what may be your reality may not be someone else's. And see, that's my thing. All the black kids being in school, I mean, yo, that's a beautiful thing. But once again, the days of A Different World and The Cosby Show that were highlighting
gone.
Like that, you know what I'm saying, are gone. So you may have a group of people that don't think we go to school, even though you saw it. There are people that say, oh, they're lazy. They don't go to school. They don't get educations. They don't do this. They don't do that. Because on TV, you don't see black doctors that much. Or you don't see, you know, Indian, you know, rappers that much. There's certain things that the media just does not put out there because they want to send a certain message. And this is what it is. Blacks are lazy, blacks are violent, and they're savages, and they eat a lot of fried chicken.
But you just talked about different points. You talked about the media, and then you also, not just you, I'm not singling out one person, but then you also were speaking about folks who live in certain neighborhoods. You almost had very similar rhetoric to how the others talk about us, and it just sounded very much so like it was a blanketed statement regarding black people who even live in the project. Like, I don't live in the projects, but I know there's people who live in the projects who are not drawing comparisons to the person who lives in 1A or 1B who are getting up, going to school. So the rhetoric that was just shared sounded very similar to other.
Well, you know what? But you know what? You know why I had to bring that up? Because this is what some of them are saying. Listen, I have these conversations with white people. I have these conversations with Asians. I have these honest conversations because there are people that I surround myself with or interact with that can be neutral. And we can talk open and honestly. And this is some of the things that they're thinking. This is why I say it, so that you'll know. Just like they feel that they know everything that we do because they watch a rap video. We don't see what they do. We're not paying. A lot of us are not. Especially this generation is not paying attention to any god. A lot of things that they're doing.
Well, you know what's being said is that all blacks are the same. Because what you described as the violence and stuff, that does go on. We got to face reality. Does go on. But on the other end, you have the number of black children that's attending schools where the tuition from kindergarten to 12th grade is $40,000 or more is increasing all the time.
Who did that research? You did that research.
Oh, I did.
You looked that up.
At Horace Mann.
But guess what? Are you putting it on Channel 7? Are you putting it on Channel 2
or
Channel
4? Well, then let me tell you how that works. Because businesses control media. through advertising dollars. And African Americans don't have that type of business, like Claude Anderson talks about very eloquently. We don't have that type of business where we can tell media, if you put this out in your, well, we're going to pull our ad dollars and go someplace else.
No, that's why we need our own media. 3054.
Yeah,
all right,
more
what's
diversity.
Up, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's time. It's some people off indeed. Let's get this party started.
Uh-oh.
Hello, everyone. Everyone, this is Hot Rod.
Yes. Hot Rod, what's up?
Well,
what's up?
Forgive me, because, you know, today's my daughter's birthday, so I've been drinking since 2 o'clock
Happy
today.
Happy birthday,
so.
Girl.
Oh, boy.
Thank you. So, but my thing is, overall, I listen to everybody. Everybody has some great, strong points. As usual, why is it when we all know the answers, but most people, to say most people, don't act on it? We all know education is the key. Why does black people don't work on that overall? We should be positive with ourselves. Like, I just don't get that concept at all. Like Brother B always says, most people stay within the box and we're afraid to look outside of the box. I mean, it's easy to dance our ass off to make that quick money, but why today most people don't want to learn the hard way to make it the money or try to make it the easy way? You're breaking up a little bit. I mean, I get what you're saying. You know what? Because it's easier to talk about the problem than actually try to fix it. Because I can talk
and
about
sometimes
my tired.
Sometimes you don't
my
know how
tire,
to
my
fix
tire,
it, to be honest.
Well, sometimes
you
don't know how
to fix the problem. Some people do know how to fix the problem.
Yeah.
They just refuse to act on fixing the problem. That's the way I see it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think that what we need to do as a people is to redefine what we deem as being successful. That's number one, because for a lot of us, being successful is the big cars, the big houses. It's, you know,
yep.
If you're male, it might be 15 women, you know, calling you 20 times during the night. If you're female, it might be something, might be jewelry, diamonds, or whatever. So what we need to do as a people is to redefine what we see as success, and then we need to set goals to work towards that with less emphasis on materialism. It's nice to have nice things. You can afford it. But you should not be making basic sacrifices in order to have materialism. We can start there. We can start rethinking the way that what we have been conditioned to believe is important for us. We can start making changes.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
You know, this other races
yeah.
that are equally as materialistic, it's just that it seems like it's okay for them to be. I mean, let's be clear. The Caucasian people that we see walking around with name brand clothing on, like, they are benefiting from the slave trade, but they have the right to be materialistic, and we don't. Not saying I don't agree with materialism in any capacity. Like, if it's over $20, I'm like, I don't know about that. But that, I hear that commentary a lot. Like, we're so materialistic, and I'm like, for the most part, that's also not really true. I mean, there is a subset of the culture that is. But for the most of us, materialism is not what we view as success. We want to own homes. We want to have successful businesses. We want to be entrepreneurs. Those things are very real, and it's not just
I agree.
Limited.
You just don't have the foundation that other people
don't
have.
We don't have
the
resources
and the foundation, yeah.
But they keep it in perspective. They keep it in perspective. That we see, we use the word rich. They use the word wealthy. There's a difference
not
between rich
the
and
wealthy.
So
not all white people are wealthy, right? Like we also.
Yeah, but guess
wealth,
what?
But
a lot of them. When you see those types with the accolades and all the fancy things, they think wealth. Like it depends on what your mind state is and how
and that depends on the knowledge that you've got.
Based
on lineage, you may not have that type of knowledge. You don't have come from generations and generations of, you know, business owners and things like that. So we are still learning, but we also want the American dream. You know, it is a hard balance.
Can I just respond to that really quickly?
Go ahead.
One of the things that's frustrating is. And not directed towards anybody, but when we start discussing solutions for our people, we're comparing ourselves to other people. We need to stop being concerned about
true.
Other cultures and worry
true.
On ourselves.
Oh, the most definitely.
We're
that's
not
true.
Gonna be treated, we're not going to be treated the same, so let's stop looking for somebody else to help us get to where we need to be. I don't care if Becky down the road is getting this because she looks a certain way. I need to focus on getting it for my family. So I just think that when we're looking for solutions for our people, we need to stop comparing to other people. Let them handle theirs. We need to get ours under control.
I agree with that.
I'm with you on that. I mean, like I said, this right here is beautiful because, once again, these are the conversations there are people out there that are afraid to have because they're worried about someone judging them. They're worried about someone putting them in a certain type of box. But see, the thing is this, we can no longer be concerned about the box because we're being affected from all angles. So why should we continue to worry about what someone else thinks when, as you know, Cherry said, we have to be more concerned with how we think and what we do for ourselves. Because we're always concerned with somebody else's stuff, but we're never really concerned with our own to get our own together.
Yeah.
And that's a major issue. We could talk about the problems all day, but until we start to take steps towards a solution, I mean, it's just going to be talk. And that's
I tell you another problem.
Why, what's up?
When you have blacks who have made it, so you know, quote unquote. And they come back and try to share and give some suggestions on what should be done, especially when you talk about your education. They get called all kind of names and ran off the stage.
I agree with him to some degree. I agree.
Yeah.
He has some points there. I see that happening.
You know, you had 13% of the black males that voted for Donald Trump. They might not have liked his attitude and his character. They liked his issues. The issues that he campaigned on and he's putting forth. So we have to respect that because they are in possibly a different socioeconomic class.
Yeah.
And people that's moved into those classes is going to want to protect what it is that they have created and also are trying to create. Not saying that they think that they're better. You know, there's no bigger racist than me. I told my daughter, don't bring home no Billy Bob. I told my grandson, don't be messing with a Miss Daisy.
Billy Bob. What the hell is a Billy Bob?
You know, a bone loop duke.
A James.
I mean, and you know what? I get it. I get it from that standpoint. And you know what? That's what some of us may perceive as racism. But to some white people, it's not racism. It's just them protecting themselves. It's not
it's
the same with
it's
Spanish. Yeah, exactly. And see,
economic.
That's all. But sometimes we take it to. Cause you know why? Because we're not in that economic running. We're not running with a lot of us are not running with the type of standards. So we'll look at the first thing we want to scream is racism, when in all actuality, it's something else. And it just goes back to corporate America. Listen, I don't really have a problem with you wearing that, but I want my company to look like this, and for you to continue to work here, I need you to kind of fall in line with the message that I'm trying to put out there, you know, to the world. So either you're with me or you're against me.
Right, you have to
represent us. Yeah, exactly. And you have to be once you join that job or once you go into that corporate America, you have to be willing to sacrifice certain things. Now, some people are with it, and they make the sacrifice. Other people want to sit back and be like, a lot of times it's us. Oh, I ain't going to change. Oh, I ain't making no changes. Listen, change is not always a bad thing, especially if elevation is a part of that change. But once again, what did Mr. P say? You said, oh, sometimes when some of us that have made it to wherever that is, we turn around and we start going back to give back. And then it gets thrown in our face. It's like, I remember Dave Chappelle, he did a skit on his show where he went and got a job at McDonald's. And then he came back home, he was all proud that he had a job, but then everybody started dissing him. But you on the corner doing nothing.
Can I also tell you?
So who's better than who?
In corporate America, we also have to remember, I'm African American in corporate America, just like they expect us to change, I can tell you they're making changes too. Because
yeah.
when I'm sitting next to my coworker, the conversation that she's having with me, I can guarantee you she's not having it at home with her friends. So
very true.
Whether they're putting on a veil where they're keeping their true feelings, you know, under wraps because they don't want to get into a debate or they don't want to discuss certain things, but they're listening and they're bringing it home and they're having a totally different discussion. I remember when Donald Trump was running, how at first everybody was like, oh, this is crazy, you know, nobody will vote for him. And then one lady stood up and she said, well, my husband kind of likes him. I'm telling you, over 3 weeks, I went from an office where everybody was like, he's crazy, to, oh, wow, he's just great. I'm starting to like what he's saying. They felt that way from day one.
Mm-hmm.
They were comfortable coming out and saying it. And when they got somebody to stand up and vocalize what they felt comfortable to join in.
Right.
So
just
keep in mind, just like they're asking us to conform, they're conforming also.
That's true.
Yep.
Very true.
Mm-mm. I mean, I agree. But once again, as it was said, as you said, and we all agreed, we have to focus on our house and our garden before we start tending someone else's. Because you know what, we've been doing it for years. It's interesting how, as much as we can be a problem, savages, whatever they want to call us, I just notice when certain areas I'm in, I always see a black nanny. I always see a black woman taking care of some white kid or pushing white kids in a stroller or taking care. And I'm like, wow. I find it very interesting. It's a kind of a double-edged sword. You know, it's a hypocritical
thing. They need us.
Well, yeah, but you know what? Because, you know what?
They need us in certain capacities.
Yeah, because you know what?
They need us.
It
makes them feel comfortable. It's servitude. Makes them feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but you know what? It's also, it's crazy. It's kind of a trust. It's like, well, yeah, we trust you with our kids because we trust you with our kids while we go out here and do what we got to do. And with that being said, none of us even really think to capitalize off of that.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
We wasn't taught that way. We wasn't taught that way to a certain degree.
But they were. How do you think this country came about? They've capitalized off stuff ever since the Pilgrims got over here. They capitalized off of when they went to Africa and they said, hey, we'll take those bad guys and we'll take them someplace. And King Africa said, yeah, no problem. Yeah, take them. We don't want them here. They capitalized off of that. They came over here and befriended the Indians and they capitalized off of that. When will we get the message to start capitalizing? See, it's interesting how we may read, we take certain notes, but we read the book, but we only take certain notes.
That's very traditional.
I'm curious,
what are you talking about as far as, like, you know, becoming sort of business owners in regard to, like, child care and things like that? Is that what you mean by capitalizing off of it?
Listen, it's capitalizing, period. Like, we can do anything that anyone else can do. Listen, like, you want to go open a corporation? Go open a corporation. Now, there may be more hurdles. And, see, I think that's the problem. We get caught up with the hurdles, and then we turn around, we get discouraged. We don't want to do it anymore.
Right. But then I think they put the hurdles there on purpose.
But sometimes it goes along to the thing of, like, well, I want to see how far you're going to go and what you're going to do to get this. And if you go that far, then that means you really want it. And I can focus on what you're doing and maybe invest in it. See, it's a sight game.
That's what it boils down to.
Right.
Because
exactly.
Let me make mention of one other thing, too.
Wait, make you mention. We got less than 60 seconds.
You really want to get fired fast. Let it get out that you are there spying on that business so you can start a business to compete against it. That's going to get fired fast.
Oh, yeah.
Your hair and stuff, that's irrelevant. If you're there to learn that business, that in the markets that they're in to come out to compete against them, that would get you fired fast.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And with that being said, once again, welcome, Lady C, and I hope this is a regular Sunday thing. Thank you, Mr. Pianti, Hot Rod, Big Red, Miss Cherry, and Kay. Thank you. It's been a great discussion, and I wish you all well for the evening and the week. Another
Thank
episode
you. Looking
of Menu in the
Can.
Yes, everybody have a good night, and progression with no question.
Good night, all.
White people.
Good night,
good night
thank
everyone.
You.
Good night.
White people.
Bye.
Crazy.